Hey folks, it's Friday again, and that means it's time for another movie retrospective. Doing something a little different today, we're doing a double feature.
Yep, same director.
Yeah, we don't usually do this type of thing, but it just kind of happened that I had actually been wanting to do the movie Dead and Buried from 1981 for a really long time, and I was very happy to see last week that Shudder had added it to their lineup, and then while I was looking at it, I was like, oh, they also added Gary Sherman's earlier movie from 1972-1973, which is called Death Line, probably better known in the United States as Raw Meat.
Yeah.
So I decided, why don't we just do two of them, because they're both sort of zombie movies.
Yeah.
Zombie, cannibal type stuff going on.
Yeah,
even though not really what you'd expect. They did something kind of different with them.
And Shudder's been rocking. I mean, those guys are awesome.
They've added so much good stuff.
We've been giving them free plugs, and it's not for them. It's for y'all. If you guys don't have... some people can get deals for this like $3.99 a month.
Yeah, I pay $5, but...
Yeah, you paid $5. I saw an offer for like $3.99 online.
Yeah.
Okay. And they have some exclusives. We saw an exclusive movie from Shudder yesterday. That thing was badass. It was called Mandy.
Mandy, yeah.
Yeah, all-star cast in it, too. It was weird, man. Weird.
Yeah,
it was good. I liked it.
Same guy that did Beyond the Black Rainbow, right? Because the whole time I was watching it, and I'm sitting there going, God, this is a lot like Beyond the Black Rainbow. It's like really weird and trippy like that.
Imagine you get abducted by this evil cult, all right? And this, like, this evil sex cult. And they give you some LSD that just seems to be irreversible, and it's super powerful. And you're trying to escape this cult and deal with it under the influences of like this evil LSD. And you're just seeing what Nicolas Cage is seeing. You know how crazy Nicolas Cage is. Imagine Nicolas Cage on some bad acid.
He's so good in this.
Yeah, in the custody of a weird sex cult. You're going to love the movie. It's awesome.
I know. I said, it's been getting a lot of buzz, and Shudder was very excited that they got an exclusive.
Because
I've been seeing ads for it for like three months. And then
we're not, Shudder doesn't pay us. All right. Shudder needs to start paying us the amount of plugs that we give.
No,
Shudder.
I'm just saying, I really like
it's
that
service. It's a good
service.
I like that service.
And it's just.
It is everything that Netflix isn't. Netflix gives you good mainstream stuff. They have some little things. This is like a lot of really cool classic stuff and new stuff. All horror.
Yeah, I like that they kind of like do half and half between old ones and new ones, because that seems like a really good combination.
Yeah.
And like I said, they just added Dead and Buried, they added Death Line, they added a whole bunch of Stephen King ones like from the 80s and 90s. They added Maniac for
Maniac.
Christ's sake.
We saw Maniac.
Yeah, we watched
last
that last
night.
Night.
Really
I was like,
good.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Much
since
better
I was a
than
kid.
I remembered it.
Yeah,
as a
and
kid.
So they also added Christmas Evil, which is probably what we're gonna do
we're probably
for the
gonna
Christmas
review that.
Movie.
Probably
I was gonna do Black Christmas because they have that too, but I was like, oh well, Christmas Evil is a little less well-known, I think, so.
So for somewhere between $4, $5, $6 a month, you can get this awesome service that's really oriented towards the kind of people that also subscribe to 13 O'Clock, really.
Yeah, they have series
the price
and
of
stuff.
One movie rental, you get to see a whole
They have series
month,
and stuff, too, but I haven't even, like, looked into that yet because I'm so busy watching, like, trying to get
so
through all the
movies.
Got so
much stuff to watch, man.
You know, I'm so busy getting through all the movies.
And you can play it on your Xbox or your PS1, your PS... What's... No, not PS. The new Sony PlayStations, you know, they have apps for it. So
we watch it through the Xbox.
We watch it through Xbox.
And I watch it on my desktop sometimes, too, in my office, like on my regular computer. But anyway, so, yeah, like I said, I had been wanting to do Dead and Buried for such a long time because... you know what's weird? I don't think I saw this back in the day. I guess we'll talk about Dead and Buried first, because even though Deathline is older, we just saw Dead and Buried like last night, and then Deathline we saw a couple nights ago. So I remember this one better. But I had actually, it was on cable a lot, like in the mid 80s. So I feel like I always kind of saw that it was on, but somehow I always ended up missing it. And then just recently, you know, I like to go through, people's lists of like most underrated horror movies from the 70s and see if there's like anything I missed out on. And this one comes up on there a lot. So I finally was like, you know, finally Shudder added it. And I was like, all right, cool. We're going to watch it. Now, like I said, this is kind of like a zombie movie, but not like any kind of zombie movie.
It's almost like a Lovecraft zombie movie.
Yeah.
Kind of like Reanimator. Happening in a situation that's kind of like Innsmouth, and the overall effect in some ways is kind of like the movie The Fog.
It gives me that the same vibe as if you can imagine like something sort of like The Fog, something like a weird like Ray Bradbury type story or like a Twilight Zone type story, Also combined with like an H.P. Lovecraft and slightly H.P. Lovecraft type of vibe.
Yeah.
Because it's like a seaside town called Potter's Bluff. And it's supposed to be in Rhode Island, although I think they actually filmed it in Mendocino County, California. But like they film everything in California. But it's supposed to be Rhode Island. It's like a fishing village. And this movie has one of the best like opening sequences in this, in, you know, in the sense that I want to find out what the fuck is going on in this movie. It's like, cause the first thing, this guy, he's a photographer. He shows up in this town and he's like walking along the beach and he's like, oh, look at the beautiful scenery. And he starts taking pictures. And then all of a sudden this little blonde hottie shows up and starts flirting like hardcore. And like a normal person would be like red flag. You know what I mean? Cause this woman is like clearly
it's either some kind of hooker or some kind of trap. You just, you know what I mean? This doesn't happen. As a man, I know, I see this shit going down, I go, that don't happen.
That's
unless
what I mean.
It's something bad getting ready to happen.
And that's pretty much
exactly
what happened.
This sucker falls right
and
for
he,
it.
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh my God, if Admiral
Akbar was here. Bunch of gruesome
murders,
the whole town's murdering people. It's weird.
Yeah.
And then they seem normal. It's,
yeah.
And you don't know what the hell's going on. The cop starts investigating. And he just finds out. The movie's probably good enough and old enough and unknown enough maybe to try to protect some of the spoilers, I think.
Yeah.
Because
I guess
newer generation, and I barely remember this movie from my childhood.
Yeah.
They put it on HBO. I'm pretty sure I came across it. I mean, some of those scenes are super familiar, and that vibe is super familiar every time.
Yeah.
We've watched it twice for this review.
Yeah.
And I was like, I know I've seen this movie. I remember seeing that. I remember seeing this. I remember, and I don't think I truly understood what it was I was seeing back then.
You kind of have to pay attention to the dialogue.
Yeah, I just remember that it was really weird, and I remember the end. There was a video game on Xbox One a long time ago. It was the main character was this guy named Torque, and he was a prisoner, and he was insane, and he was hallucinating. And some of the stuff from that video game about film projectors and guys talking to you, I think they got it from this movie.
It's possible, sure.
Remember at the very end, the guy starts turning on all the film projectors and he's showing what one of the characters had done over her history? You know, just, it was weird. It's a really weird movie. And it has a very Lovecraftian vibe.
It's almost kind of, it's like a weird, creepy, sort of supernatural police procedural.
Yeah.
It's more like a mystery than a straight-up horror movie, even though it's got a lot of gore in it.
Almost kind of like Wicker Man, where a cop is investigating an entire town.
Yeah, it has a Wicker Man kind of vibe, too, a little bit. It's sort of like I said, you know, this guy comes there, you know, this chick starts, like, flirting with him and stuff, and he's like, ooh, you know, he doesn't think, oh, too good to be true. He's like, yeah, I'm going to jump on that. And then all of a sudden, you know, he gets set on fire. And then you find out, like, as I said, the cop, who is actually, I didn't realize this the first time I watched it, because I wasn't paying attention, I guess, because I was drinking, but like, the second time I watched it, because I'm sitting there going, well, why didn't the cop know all this stuff was going on before? But it's because he's new in town.
Yeah.
Like, he had gone away, like, he was from that town when he was born there, and then he went to, like, the big city, and, like, went to cop school, and all that other kind of stuff, or he got a criminology degree or whatever, and then he came back to his hometown to take over the sheriff job. So he hadn't been there for many, many years.
Yeah.
So this is basically like a thing where it's got this really great, like, creepy vibe, like this whole paranoia thing, because you don't know, like, who in town is in on this shit.
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't really want to spoil, like, what the secret actually is, because it's actually pretty interesting. And I don't think I've seen another movie with this type of vibe, but
yeah. And this movie is not famous. You know what I mean?
It's like
it's a forgotten,
said,
really forgotten good movie. I know I've seen this. I know I've seen this before. And I forgot all about it.
Yeah.
I'm glad that Shudder brought it back up, because I was like, oh, yeah.
Like I said, I just kept hearing about
it. It's creepy.
One, because the poster is fantastic.
Yeah.
I love the poster for this movie. It's so striking. Two, like I said, you know, I don't think I saw it. I remember it being on cable back in the day, but I don't think I saw it back then. But it's one that comes up on a lot of people's radars, like a very, very underrated, like, 80s horror movie, one that doesn't get much attention, but that is actually really good. Like I said, I know this might be a controversial statement, but I actually think I like this a bit better than The Fog.
Yeah, it's better than The Fog.
It's gorier, for sure. Stan Winston.
It delivers a lot more.
Stan Winston actually did the special effects for this, which actually, other than one scene with, like, a fake head that looks a little fakey, but, like, all of the other special effects in this look really, really good.
Yeah.
I love that the dude that played Grandpa Joe in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory back in that nice, nice old man is like a really good character in this.
You know, we've already
playing against type.
We've already kind of spilled the beans that it's a zombie movie, but it's not a zombie.
It's like not any like kind I said. It's not like seen. A traditional zombie.
Yeah.
Movie.
Dead people are doing stuff, and they're indistinguishable from living people. It's a trip.
That's what I mean. Trip. It's like, one, you don't know why, like, this cop is investigating all these murders that are happening. He doesn't know who's doing them. They're, like, really horrible murders. Like I said, dude gets set on fire. Like, you do.
Crushing
gets,
girls' heads in.
Yeah, a girl gets her head crushed in with a rock. Like, a dude gets all sliced up, and you know, dude gets acid put up his nose, and his head explodes and stuff.
They make him inhale acid.
Yeah, and stuff like that. So, he's investigating. He can't figure out who's doing it, and then you have the whole thing, because you know who's doing it, because you see, but the cop doesn't know. So it's like this really horrible, and you're like, why are these people doing this? And then there's like mysterious stuff where he's like walking around, he's like, hey, that looks like the dude that died. It's like, why is he fine? And all this other stuff. So it's like, you don't really know what's going on, and it's like super creepy. And like I said, there's this great feeling of like, this creepy paranoia of like, what are all these people do? Like, what is their end game? Who's in on it? Who knows about it?
Yeah. How is this happening? Well, how could the dead rise like this? You know, why are they doing this? That kind of stuff.
And also, I should note that the sheriff's wife is played by Melody Anderson, who's probably most famous for playing good old Dale Arden from Flash Gordon.
Flash Gordon, she was good. There's cuties in this movie.
Yeah, and this was like, I think this was a year after Flash Gordon came out.
Yeah, and the guy who wrote this is the same guy who wrote Alien 1.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that. Here's what it was. The screenplay for this was written by Ronald Shusett and Dan O'Bannon, who were the two guys, very famously, who wrote the screenplay for Alien. Now, later on, I've heard that Dan O'Bannon came out and said, well, I didn't really write the script. Like, Ronald Shusett wrote it, and I gave him notes on it, and he said he was going to incorporate the notes, but then I saw the movie and he didn't incorporate the notes. So I don't know how true that is. Like, I've just heard that Dan O'Bannon said that, you know, I didn't really have that much contribution into the script, so it was mostly Ronald Shusett. But like I said, same, you know, relative team that went into Alien. And actually, this movie, here's something that I read, and I didn't notice this the first time that I watched it, so I looked for it the second time. The way that it's shot, like I said, it's very much like the fog. It's very, like, cool colors. Like, everything's kind of, like, gray and drained and stuff. There's no red in it, except for blood. And there's a little bit at the beginning and, like, a little bit at the end. That's the only time that the filmmaker, like, the cinematographer, the director, whatever, like, put red in it. So this is, like, a very well thought out. The visuals of it are well thought out.
It's got some really creepy cemetery scenes.
Yeah, and it's like the score is good. Yeah. It's just like a really good, low-key, creepy movie with some decent gore effects. Like, it's fairly gory. Yeah. You know, there's gorier ones from that time, but this one is actually fairly gory. And the special effects are actually very good. Because, like I said, Stan Winston did them. Other than one that was a little bit fakey looking, but other than that, like, they're all really good. And all
it
the
was good for
scenes,
the time. Very good.
Yeah,
for
yeah,
time.
Yeah. It's and I feel like it's one that kind of gets forgotten about.
Yeah, this one needs to be brought back.
Yeah, but
I'm
this
glad
was
the Shutter showed this one.
Yeah. Like I said, I had actually had this on the list for a really long time because, like I said, I kept seeing an underrated list. And then when it came up, I was like, woohoo. And then I saw that they had done, you know, the director's name. I don't remember. I don't know if we mentioned it, but it's Gary A. Sherman. This was actually his second movie. Now, like I said, it came out in 1981. Now, his first movie, famously, was actually made in the UK, even though Gary Sherman is American. And it came out in the UK in 1972, and it came out in the US in 1973. Now, in the UK, it's called Deathline, but in the US, it's called Raw Meat. I guess I know why, but here's the thing. Now, in the 70s and 80s, there are famously a lot of really, really misleading poster art. But this has got to be, I mean, this is up there with some misleading poster art. You can tell not only did the U.S. distributor rename this movie Raw Meat, but they also made the poster. It's like this illustration. It's the same one I used for the title card. It's like this kind of painting of all these like half naked looking people that look all wild and shit. Like they're supposed to be cannibals. It's supposed to look like Cannibal Ferox or Cannibal Holocaust. They obviously wanted the poster to look like that. So you could be forgiven for watching this movie and being like, what the fuck? This isn't even because while there is technically cannibalism in this, it's not like a cannibal, like, you know what I mean? It's not like what you're thinking of. Right. It's not like an Italian cannibal exploitation movie. It's not really like that. It's actually mostly just like Dead and Buried is. It's almost it's mostly a police procedural.
Yeah.
Frankly.
Yeah, it kind of stars guy Donald Pleasance.
Donald Pleasance
plays a total dick. And he's funny.
He is like super bitchy and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
He's like so...
Because, you can tell he had fun doing this.
Yeah. Huh? It's like... He plays like the little main police inspector. Yeah. Now, the interesting thing about this is like... The reason it's called Deathline in the UK is just because the story is based around... an urban legend that there were all these miners or like people working on a tube station or working on a line, you know, underground, like back in the 1800s, and it fell in on them. And the company that was building, you know, the tunnel, like didn't even bother to go in and get them. So there's like an urban legend that these people were still alive down there. And they were kind of like Chud, you know, cannibalistic.
Well, guess what? They were still alive down there.
Yeah. So that's the thing. So that's where that whole thing comes from. So, but like I said, that at the beginning, like the cops don't know that. So one of the first people that they notice that disappears is like this guy. He like collapses in the tube station and these two students find him, and then they come back, you know, then they go get a cop, and then the cop comes back and then the guy is gone. And then they find out that the guy was like an OBE. So, you know, he was like an upper class twit or whatever. So the interesting thing about this movie, too, is that it almost has, it's a very British movie, even though it's an American director. Christopher Lee is in it also. He doesn't have a huge part, but he's like an MI5 guy. And he's very twee and snotty and stuff, which is, it's really kind of funny. So it's kind of like, it's almost kind of like a thing about the surface world, right? And then the cannibals, like underneath the subway tunnels. And it's almost kind of like a class thing too, because Donald Pleasance's character, who's the cop, is kind of like a very working class, like the way he talks and shit like that, he's very working class. And then he's kind of like put at odds against this, like, you know, tough, you know, like Christopher Lee, who's kind of like telling him don't investigate this and blah blah, because I think he kind of knows something about it. So that's kind of an interesting thing too, where it has like this weird like metaphorical thing going on. And it's almost kind of like, it has elements of black comedy. And I forgot to mention, too, that Dead and Buried, when it was first written and shot, it was actually written and shot as a black comedy. But then when it was shown to the distributors or the producers, they said, I don't like that. Recut it so it's more like a horror movie. And so it's funny because there are little funny things in it, but you would never know that that was shot as a comedy. It just goes to show the magic of editing, I suppose.
Soundtrack.
Yeah, and the soundtrack, that's a huge thing, too, especially in horror movies. I think that's kind of an underrated contribution, like all the stuff that goes on.
Yeah, so what you have kind of in this one, in Raw Meat, or what's
Deathline.
Deathline. Imagine kind of like Castle Freak.
Yeah.
Cross between Castle Freak and The Descent, in a way. Or, you know, or Chud, Subterranean... Cannibaloid, snatching people and eating them, and then you find out more about that situation, and it was pretty good. I think out of the two, I'm gonna have to give it to Dead and Buried.
I like Dead and Buried better,
but they're both worth watching.
Yeah, I like Dead and Buried better. It's more accomplished. It's creepier. It's gorier.
The execution is better, I think.
Yeah,
the idea is a lot better because it's definitely. To me, Dead and Buried is a Lovecraft spinoff.
Yeah.
That's like something they would try to make a Lovecraft movie out of.
It did give me a very Shadow Over Innsmouth.
Yeah.
By way of Ray Bradbury vibe.
Took a lot of those concepts that you would see in a Lovecraft story and put them together.
Yeah. It's a more original story for sure.
Yeah, a lot more original, but...
There's, like I said, now, perhaps, I don't know, I mean, yeah, there was a lot of cannibal movies and stuff that came out in the 70s, you know, particularly from Italy. So cannibalism was not hugely original. This one is kind of like I said, it has some gory parts, but it's not super gory. It's mostly focused on the police procedural and kind of the character meshing. And an interesting choice that they made with this one too is that the cannibal, who is not actually given a name. He's just called the man. But he is actually a lot more sympathetic than any of the people, of the like other people in the movie, which I thought was kind of an interesting choice. So it's almost kind of like, it's interesting because we were watching Maniac last night too, and you almost kind of feel sorry for that guy too, but sort of like he's a little bit sympathetic. He's like a creep and everything and a murderer, obviously, and that's horrible. But he has a little bit of, you know, you feel a little bit of sympathy for him because he was so messed up.
Kind of like Ron Jeremy gone wrong.
Yeah. Gone very, very wrong.
Yeah.
But in this, in Raw Meat or Deathline, you feel, yes, the cannibal, he's like, yeah, they're eating people and stuff like that. But you feel bad. It's like he didn't have any control over his situation. So he's a lot more sympathetic. And like I said, all the people up on the surface world are just these snarky assholes that are just like constantly sniping at each other, and particularly the cops and stuff. And like the Donald Pleasance, I love when the fucking students like first come to report the stuff, and he's just like, what are you, probably just stole the shit from him. And he was just, he's just like busting his balls like the whole time, and he's like, look man, I'm just trying to like report a dude that was collapsed in the fucking subway station, you know, excuse me for reporting something, next time I'll just fucking leave him there. But yeah, so like I said, this was actually a pretty well-reviewed movie when it came out in the 70s. Even Roger Ebert thought it was really good. Like, I even read a review from the time where the person liked it better than Night of the Living Dead, which...
That's tough.
Yeah, that's kind of... I don't know.
Night of the Living Dead is a classic.
Yeah, and it's different. It's a different type of thing. It's really not even in the same... I don't know. No, I'm not going to say it's not the same genre, but it's like they're too different to compare.
Not in the same league.
Yeah, it's really not. Like I said, it's not a zombie movie. It's a cannibal movie, but it's not like, you know, oh, let's go to this island with like a whole, you know,
Night of the Living Dead changed everything.
It did.
Night of the Living Dead changed movies. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, every zombie movie since then came from that.
So.
Except for Dead and Buried.
Right.
Because that...
Even though Romero didn't say they were zombies, he just said that they were ghouls.
Yeah, they never used the word zombies.
They kind of...
Well, he didn't know. He didn't know that
A zombie is not really a dead person. A zombie is a person underneath a spell who everybody thinks is dead, and the guy brings him up, and he's your slave.
Yeah, you know, I mean, so technically...
A zombie is not really a dead
technically
person.
Technically, we're using zombie incorrectly.
Incorrectly, right.
Because it's not a dead person that came back to life.
A dead creature, an undead creature that feeds off of corpses or living people, that would be a ghoul.
A ghoul, yeah. So actually, that would
Romero
be a
Romero was right.
That, yeah, technically.
That they're ghouls, they're not zombies.
Yeah, I think just later on, now I'm kind of curious as to why that happened, like why the zombie ghoul, like why does somebody call
I
that
I saw a documentary on it. It's because nobody knew, at the time that they were promoting these movies, nobody knew what a ghoul
what
was.
What a ghoul was.
But they already were familiar with the idea of a zombie, that things could come out of a grave.
Yeah.
You know.
Even though, like I said, technically, just like he's on Serpent and the Rainbow.
Yeah.
The West.
That's
Raven
a zombie movie.
That's a zombie movie because zombie, he wasn't dead. They just gave him a drug that you know that brought him back. So he didn't die and then come back. He was just like. You know.
I think Bela Lugosi's White Zombie was
a zombie movie. Yeah, that was, and I Walked with a Zombie. Yeah. That was also a zombie movie because before Romero came along in 1968, Night of the Living Dead. You know, I think pretty much there weren't a lot of zombie movies, but all of them were like that, were voodoo based because that's where the myth came from.
Yeah.
So, you know, technically Serpent in the Rainbow, that's a zombie movie. The other ones are ghoul movies.
This one is a cross between. I would say it's a zombie movie and a ghoul movie.
Yeah. Dead and Buried?
Yeah, Dead and Buried.
Yeah.
They are dead.
Yeah.
But they are under the control of, I guess, possibly voodoo. It's voodoo.
But they are dead.
They are dead, though, yeah.
So it's kind of like a combination between the two.
Yeah.
And like I said, I think the best part of Dead and Buried was, what's that guy's name? Jack Albertson, right?
Yeah.
Jack Albertson, I think. I'm going to look it up on Wikipedia. Yeah, Jack Albertson, the guy that played Grandpa Joe in Willy Wonka, like I said, among many other things. But he always plays like a nice grandfatherly figure. He's like really good in this, one of the great villains of the 80s movies. So him being the best thing about Dead and Buried, the best thing about Deathline is Donald Pleasance.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Playing
a total crotchety.
Dick.
He's a dick.
With his fucking tea and like flinging the bag. What, we have tea bags now? What is this about? And I was like, you can
Dead and Buried, the guy who's making them he does say it's voodoo and technology and medical breakthrough.
Yeah.
He basically says it's both.
Or says he's not going
to
tell.
But he was going to go to his grave. Yeah, he's not going to tell you what it was. He'll take the secret to his grave. Basically, he says, it's either voodoo or it's a medical breakthrough, and I'm going to take it to my
grave. Or a combination.
Or a combination, I'm taking it to my grave.
Also, Dead and Buried has a really good ending. And the first time I saw it, I did not see it coming. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? The thing that happens at the end.
And,
okay.
And the thing is I think Reanimator took a lot from this.
It may have,
And maybe From Beyond may have taken some. No, I think just Reanimator.
Yeah.
Took from this.
Yeah. This does
have some, you know, about guys that can bring people back to life.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. And, well, that goes back to Frankenstein. But when you see Dead and Buried, you'll see exactly what it is I'm talking about. I want to spoil it in the end, but. It's very much something like out of a Lovecraft spinoff.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of stuff in there that kind of reminds me of the science-y guys out of From Beyond and Reanimator. It's that same type of thing.
Well, I like that it kind of had a little bit of both. It kind of had kind the science-y like stuff, and then it had like a black magic-y thing going on too. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like I said, Gary Sherman made some other movies. I think later on he made Poltergeist 3, which that was the one with the mirrored all the mirrors in the building, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I never saw Poltergeist 3.
Yeah, I think I saw that one. It wasn't.
Yeah, usually by the time it gets to 3, it's not any good. Even though Halloween 3 is my favorite of the Halloweens. I don't give a shit what you people say.
A lot of people like Halloween 3.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with any other Halloween.
That's not even that hot a take
anymore.
I like
that movie. I grew up with that movie, and I love that movie. I want to get that on Blu-ray.
I think the only reason it pissed people off was because it didn't have Michael Myers in it.
Yeah,
at the time.
I hadn't seen the other ones, so the first Halloween I saw was Halloween 3.
Yeah. I actually kind of like that idea, and it's like, I don't know why they didn't do the anthology thing, but I will. They kind of do that kind of shit nowadays.
They should have done that again, called, you know, Halloween 9, and have nothing to do with anything. You
know? Just to make everybody mad.
Yeah, just to fuck this guy off.
And it probably would. Nowadays, you know, when Halloween 3 came out, we didn't have the internet, so we didn't have to hear everyone whining like 24/7 about it. But now it's
I would
like a
revisit Halloween 3 and reboot that. Like, what if that dude had a secret descendant who had improved on that technique? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he kind of had a company like Silver Shamrock. And he's going to
redo that.
That's
what they should call the movie. They should call it Silver Shamrock.
I'd call that bitch Silver Shamrock.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Somebody's
that would be a good movie.
Filmmaker, somebody do that. Because I love the conceit of like putting on a mask and it fucks up your face
and
like
and
sticks
it's a,
on there.
It's a hard reboot of Halloween 3, even though the main bad guy in Silver Shamrock refers to the guy in Halloween 3. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Somebody needs to. Like somebody get on that.
Something like that, yeah.
The thing,
you could say, well, how could you use the name Silver Shamrock? Everybody would know what it was after he tried to kill all those little kids with the masks.
You could think of something else.
Think of a way to get away. Yeah,
that's what I mean. Be creative. You guys can do it.
That name, Silver Shamrock, man, you'd get a lot. You'd get a lot of people through the door, probably.
Well, yeah, because that movie, like horror fans, know exactly what that is.
Yeah,
and also it's a real evocative kind of name. You could do all kind of like I'm a graphic designer, so I can
just
feel about like the logo.
You need to make a shirt like that, man, with the pumpkin on it, with a pumpkin jack o' lantern.
Yeah,
with Silver Shamrock on it, man. You make a
Silver Shamrock.
Yeah,
and man, then like I said, every time you wore it, the song would get stuck in everyone's head.
Beep 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 beep,
and everybody be like, "You suck."
Terrible computer graphics.
I know.
It was like
well,
even
I have
before
to say,
Commodore 64.
One of the coolest things that I liked about Halloween 3, I always like 80s horror movies that have the stones to kill off little children.
Yeah.
That kicks ass.
When I saw that snake come out of a little kid's head, he's laying on the floor and all roaches and crickets ran out of his head.
Yeah, because like when you saw that as a kid, you're like,
I lost it.
That could happen to me.
Lost it.
I'm a little kid like that little kid.
Yeah. And then his dad's running from the snake, or was it the mom running from the snake?
Oh, I can't
remember. That came out
of
the kid's head.
Yeah.
Weaponized that kid's head. It blew up into snakes and snakes.
Weaponized
the kid's head. Yeah. Blew up into snakes and crickets and roaches and oh man, that's a good idea.
It was, yeah. Like I said, somebody needs to get on that. You don't have to like remake it, but
you had to be watching TV for it to activate.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had to see the commercial.
It's such a great concept.
And it shot that thing in there, shot that little bit of Stonehenge into you, and blew your head up.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, in case you didn't know what was it's a piece of Stonehenge.
Yeah.
And we're not even kidding about that.
That's awesome.
But yeah, all right, so.
Those damn druids fucking you up.
From thousands of years ago, they're still fucking you up nowadays.
They don't want you watching TV.
It rots your brain.
Yeah, literally.
The druids knew that thousands of years ago.
Bunch of snakes and,
that's right.
Yeah. Snakes and cockroaches.
All right. All right. So that'll do it for our double feature. It was a Gary A. Sherman double feature today. Dead and Buried and Deathline, a.k.a. Raw Meat.
They're both good, but I'm going to give it to Dead and Buried.
I actually like Dead and Buried better because it's structured, like I said, more like The Fog, more like a ghost story type thing, even though it's, you know, voodoo zombie type of thing. But it has a similar kind of vibe, where the other one is more like police procedural crossed with kind of Chud type stuff going on. So, so that's just my preferred medium, but they're both very good, so check them out. Like I said, Dead and Buried is from 1981. Deathline came out in 1972 in the UK, 1973 over here, called Raw Meat. Poster, like I said, doesn't have anything to do with the movie, so don't even pay attention to it, even though it's a nice piece of artwork. But that'll do it for our latest movie retrospective. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Remember, if you like the show, to like, share, subscribe on all your social media. If you'd like to financially support the show, you can go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/13oclockpodcast. Or you can go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. And there's a link in the sidebar to a PayPal account where you can give a one-time donation. Remember that our movie retrospectives, just like this one here, come out every Friday. We also do a 13 o'clock matinee, which is three new movies in the theater. That comes out on Sundays, and our regular episodes come out every Tuesday, so keep an eye out for those, and we will see you next time. Bye.